Good morning and a warm welcome to the Simply Divine program. I'm Maria Colfer and you're tuned to Southeast Radio. My guest this morning lives in the Milton Keynes area, is a frequent visitor to West Clare, and while on leave from Iran some years ago to attend the wedding of a close friend where he was the best man, he met, fell in love and 6 months later married the lady who was the chief bridesmaid on that day. They now have two adult daughters. After spending the next 40 years in the construction industry, from building roads to oil fields in southwest Iran, to building on the extension of the Piccadilly line to Heathrow Airport and the London Underground, he decided to change career. He felt called to a more spiritual life and became a lay minister in the Church of England. In 2017, he became a diocesan reader in the Church of Ireland in St. Mary's Cathedral in Limerick. And in 2019, the bishop appointed him the communications officer for the Diocese of Limerick and Killaloe. And for the past 5 or 6 years, he's been a chaplain to the Hertfordshire Police. I'm delighted to welcome Stephen Fletcher. Good morning, Stephen, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning. It's my pleasure, Maria. Thank you very much for that introduction.
So it was love at first sight. You were just smitten straight away when you laid eyes on the chief bridesmaid.
Yeah, it must be so. And we're still together. And also, it was the great good fortune that she had an Irish father. Although she was brought up in England, she had an Irish father from Kilrush. So that's our connection with Ireland.
Ireland and Clare.
But I'd already been sort of conditioned to it because I was working in construction. I left school and became a trainee engineer, and I was working on the motorways when we used to build a lot of motorways in the early 70s. And of course, 90% of the workforce were from Ireland. And, I very quickly got used to hearing them, got used to their accents and got used to the crack, and I understood them. So the first time I actually came across to Ireland, you know, I really felt very comfortable, you know, almost like coming home. And I'm pleased to say that feeling has continued. So we're fortunate. We have a nice house in Kilrush. Both Francis' parents have passed away now, but we enjoy our time there. And in fact, before the pandemic, I was actually spending longer in Ireland than I was in England. But it's very fortunate to be able to have the two, and we enjoy both.
Well, 40 years in industry took you to far-flung places and back to London. Was the work difficult?
No, I don't recall it as being difficult. I was an engineer and mainly working for contractors, but also working for consultants, which is what I was doing when we were putting roads in the southwest of Iran. And of course, that was before the revolution, when things were very different under the Shah, and there's a lot more freedom at that time. Being a contractor is difficult. And we've had our ups and downs with different companies as we've been working. But yeah, it's difficult in that way, yeah.
Then you felt called to a more spiritual life.
Yes, I...
Did you consider ordination even?
Oh, no. No, I really felt that was one step too far. No, I'd always been involved with my local church, and Francis is practicing Catholic, and so I got used to the fact that she would go off every Sunday to church, and I picked it up. You know, I was born in the Church of England and was in the choir and all the rest of the things that you do. And then as I went to university and college, I didn't attend so much, but it was her really that brought me back to the church. But of course, I went to my church, so every Sunday she would go out of the front door and turn left, and I'd go out the front door and turn right, and we both went to our separate churches. But it was a small little parish, and I'd been everything, like so many small parishes. The same people just swap the hats around, and you do different jobs. And I came to the stage where I thought, well, it was time for something more. And I was fortunate. I had a very good vicar who encouraged me. And also, there were a number of retired priests as well that were a help to me in making my mind up. And so I trained in the St. Albans Diocese in England to be a reader. And that's a 3-year course. It's a part-time course. It's one day a week and occasional weekends. So it was good because I told them that I'm not particularly academic. You know, I had to write essays. Now, the last essay I wrote was what I did on my school holidays, you know, because in civil engineering, I didn't have to write essays. I had to understand mathematics and structure and, you know, drainage and stuff like that. But I wasn't used to writing essays. So that was a bit of a learning curve. But they were very patient with me. And I think they were quite keen to widen it to people who have had real life experience. So that was something I could definitely bring.
And you're a licensed reader. What does that mean?
Well, you're licensed by the bishop. So, you know, it's as simple as that, really. I mean, you have the bishop's permission to practice as a reader. And so you're licensed to do that, you know, in the same way that a priest would be ordained. I think even priests get licensed as well. So it's just a way that the bishop has of controlling who is speaking in his churches, I think.
And what does it permit you to do, we'd say?
Well, it permits you to, mainly the work that we do is leading worship and preaching. We also lead house groups and can get involved in parish visiting and perhaps helping with youth groups and things like that. And the roles are different in England than they are in Ireland. The reader in Ireland doesn't do quite as much as I can do here in England. But it's very much what you make of it, really, and what your incumbent encourages you to do. So it's non-sacramental ministry. So, you know, we can't do the sacraments, but we can do the other. Also, it involves in England here, when I'm doing it, sometimes it can be taking communion by extension, we call it, which means that the elements have previously been consecrated, and then I can take them to a care home or to, you know, an elderly person at home. And so that's something which we can also do, but we can't consecrate the elements. You know, it has to be part of a service in a church where we take the elements away and distribute them in a care home or in a private home.
And while you're a reader in the Anglican Church, you're also in the Church of Ireland.
Yes.
Does the same qualification it is. Cover both?
Yeah, my meagre qualifications, because the Church of Ireland is part of what we call the Anglican Communion, which is a worldwide body consisting of over 160 different countries, which I suppose it's a legacy from the days of empire, but they are what we call part of the Anglican Communion. So they recognise that, you know, if you're qualified in one, you're qualified in another. So I was going along to the churches in Ennis, and the rector there knew that I was a reader, and so he asked me, and then Bishop Kenneth Kieran then asked me if I would like to, you know, he said he was happy to continue with the informal arrangement, but if I'd like to be licensed, he would do it formally, and so that's what happened. And rather nice, the people that I trained with in St Albans, they came over and robed up, and they were part of the service as well. So, you know, we had about 10 of us there. We were there mob-handed as I was licensed in St Mary's Cathedral in Limerick.
In Limerick, that was lovely. Well, you're chaplain, or one of the chaplains to the police force. What kind of issues arise that members of the force would talk to a chaplain or feel the need to?
I mean, they are subject to the same pressures that we all have. So they've got domestic pressures, they've got money pressures, you know, finances. Yeah. And then, of course, you add to it the difficulty that many of them have with shift work and the disruption that that brings to family life. And, you know, the uncertain hours and the risks and things like that. It can be we know it's a high-pressure job, whether you're talking about the Garda Síochána or you're talking about police, you know, it's exactly the same. And they all the usual things, and with the added bit. And, of course, the problem is now that they are subject to so much scrutiny, whereas in the past, you know, it seems that they have got very few friends. You know, everyone would seem to be against them. Everyone's got a mobile phone, and they can film them and start to edit it or whatever. You know, they can't sort of, they're never off duty in that respect. And so I think that all adds to the pressure. And the role of a chaplain, really, is you're just there. We tell them we're there as a listening ear, you know, a friend who can just talk to them if they want to talk or not. So the typical way it would work is that I would go in during a shift change when there's a briefing going on for the new shift and just sit with them so that I'm aware of what they're up to, but also just I'm here and, you know, they've got my contact details and they can contact me at any time, you know, phone me up or email me. So that's how it works. It's not a high profile job, but it's something that I think is worthwhile. And I think more and more the senior officers are realizing that it's an important resource that they can use. You know, we're talking about wellness and things like that. And of course, you know, this is something that the chaplains can provide as well.
Well, you're involved with BBC Three Counties and Clare FM. How did you get into radio?
Yeah, I know. It's extraordinary how my career has developed. I have had a passion for radio ever since the early 60s. So I'm old and I go back a long way. And in the early 60s in the UK, we just had three radio stations, you know, all run by the BBC. So we had the Home Service, we had the Third Programme, and we had the Light Programme, and that was it. But all of a sudden, from boats floating on the North Sea, or on the Irish Sea as well, we suddenly had these pirates coming. And that was, for a young, you know, I'd have been, I don't know, 10 or 12 or 13, that was genuinely exciting. I try and tell the kids now we've got hundreds of channels and hundreds of radio stations, but it was so exciting just to pick up a medium wave radio and tune across the dial and find a completely new station doing things in a completely new way. And that really fired my enthusiasm to the extent that I even converted a shed that we had at home and stuck ed boxes on the ceiling and tried to make my own little studio. And that was when I was still a teenager. And, you know, I suppose logically what I should have done was been brave enough when I left school to try and go and float on the North Sea. But instead I went for the safer option and became a land-based civil engineer. And I have no complaints on that. But it's always been when we moved, I found reel upon reel of quarter-inch tape, which I'm sure you're far too young to know anything about, Maria, but it's how we used to record in the good old days. And when you wanted to edit, you had a razor blade and some sticky tape, and you would physically cut the tape, cut the recording tape to edit to what you wanted. And of course now the technology is such that it's just so easy now. So yeah, that was the start of it, and it's always been there at the back of my mind doing it. And then I found how I could edit on a computer. I still wasn't doing it for anything other than for my own enjoyment. But then that was something that becoming a reader enabled, because I became an expert on something, if you like. I could talk then about churches, and I understood, you know, the hierarchy of the church and things like that, so that when something occurred, it was something a bit odd. It was a funeral in our little church. And I thought, well, I'll just have a go and put it together. I put something together on using my computer and sent it off to the radio station. And to my amazement, they broadcast it as I sent it. And, the pride, you know, you really feel quite a bit of pride when that happens. They didn't come back and say, oh, well, it's all right, but, you know, we've had to do this to it. And, goodness, that was all wrong. And they just sent it and they used it. And so, mind you, it cost them nothing. But, they were really encouraging in that way. And so I thought, well, I can do this. And so they were good enough. I did some courses with them. And, it's something that developed. I'm not doing much at the moment because I'm spending so much of my time in Ireland. But I've still got my BBC pass and I've still got access to their software and things. And, if anything crops up, I had a phone call the other day asking if I could do some holiday cover, covering the producing of a faith programme that they've got. But no, it's been really exciting, you know, to walk into a studio. I still get a buzz from it. You know, I still do, just the power of that. So that was it. I've done other things for them. You know, I have worked for the big Radio 4, mainly covering elections and things like that. They wheeled me out to cover local results and things, but I've also worked in the election studio behind the scenes, the TV studio, and that was really exciting. But yeah, so I've done that and enjoyed it.
Well, it was before my time, but our studio started as well with those big reels and using the razor blades to edit. Well, now, your experience in radio must have introduced you to many interesting interviews and interviewees. Can you tell us something of that?
The thing is, when you get a prominent person coming to the local area, you know, it's always a good opportunity to get hold of them. I mean, the chances are they could be flogging a book or something, so they're keen to talk to someone and to advertise it. So I would go along, you know, you'd hear of someone coming. I don't know if you know Terry Waite, but he's a remarkable story, of course, how he was held in captive for so long. But he came to St Albans and I tracked him down and went along to his he was launching a book there, and so I had an opportunity to talk to him. I mean, I've spoken to Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, when he came to St Albans, and I've spoken to quite a few bishops, you know, when they visited St Albans, as they quite often do. You know, I would go along, and the BBC seemed to like it because I could sort of speak the same language as they were, if you know what I mean. You know, it wasn't it wasn't somebody who had no faith at all talking to them. So, yeah, I've done, you know, it's been exciting. I've enjoyed it. And, you know, I hope the opportunities still continue. I very much enjoy just talking to the ordinary people. You know, there's some very remarkable people in our parishes, and I do enjoy talking to them and finding out about them, you know, whether they're bell ringers or charity workers or whatever they're doing. So many people have got such a fascinating story to tell, and I enjoy doing that as well.
Well, now, speaking of bishops, our new bishop is from County Clare. Do you happen to know him?
I know of him because I have a number of colleagues who work very closely with him, and I am, you know, I know. And talking of lay leadership, you know, like a reader is, and that is something I know that Father Gerr has been promoting in the Catholic Diocese of Killaloe, and I can see that is probably, from the interviews that he's given, that's probably one of the things that he's going to focus on when he comes to you in Ferns, because, yeah, I have heard nothing but good things about him. He's very energetic. And a humble man as well. I'm always reluctant to talk about other denominations but I've been impressed with his humility and his knowledge and his spirituality. You know, it's not something that we always imagine a Catholic bishop to be. You know, going back, I would have considered them to be distant and austere, whereas Father Gerr is warm and a very engaging personality. And I think he's going to do great things in Ferne. I really do. You know, particularly things like lay involvement, which, of course, you know, he's got these people that have been going through, I think it's a 3-year course, and they're about to finish it in Diocese of Killaloe. But, of course, it's an opportunity for women to take part in ministry. I know, you know, I'm not going to get into that. I know there is a feeling that women could be more involved. And, you know, that's an opportunity that they can do. And that's certainly, you know, I should think more than half of our readers in the Church of England are women. And so, you know, it's really it is completely open to everyone, and it's an opportunity for people who might not be able to be ordained. They can certainly still serve the Almighty by doing work like that.
We're coming close to the end. You're involved, I know, in a religious program called Beyond Belief down in Clare FM. What do you think is the role and impact of a spiritual program on local radio?
I think it's a ministry. It is a ministry. It is proclaiming the word, you know, in whatever way we can. And so it needs to cover local events that are happening at parish levels all across the different denominations that we serve. But also it's to provide some insight. Perhaps somebody has got a book or something that would be useful to the listeners. So it is, I see it as missional. You know, it is a mission. We are there to share the word, and we're there to help people understand and raise the profile. I mean, that's the thing. I'm afraid I see in Ireland, not so much, but certainly I see in England, that we're becoming a faithless society, and people are searching. They are searching for things, and they don't know what they want in some cases, you know, and so I think it's important that we're there and we show them the way.
Well, on that note, Stephen, it's been a real pleasure to chat to you. You have lived a varied career leading to a more spiritual dimension in recent times. You're blessed with a wonderful, rich and calming radio voice, and may you continue to bring peace and hope to your many listeners. Thank you and good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm told I have a face for radio as well as a voice for radio.
Well, that's all from us for this week and for me for a few weeks as I'm taking a break. But do tune in to Simply Divine, as Heather Hadrill will be here for the next few weeks, and Anne Cousins. My thanks to Patricia, as always, for being so kind and efficient on the sound desk. Taking us out, we have a particular favourite tune of Stephen Fletcher. It's called Song for Ireland. And finally, remember, we're all made in the image and likeness of God, so we're not just human, we're also divine.
Walking all the day near tall towers where falcons build their nests. Silver-winged they fly, they know the call of freedom in their breasts. Saw Blackhead against the sky, where twisted rocks they run to the sea. Living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more. I stood by your Atlantic sea, and I sang a song for Ireland. Drinking all the day in old pubs where fiddlers love to play. Saw one touch the bow, he played a reel which seemed so grand and gay. Stood on Dingle Beach and cast in wild foam, we found Atlantic bass. Living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more. I stood by your Atlantic sea and sang a song for Ireland. With true friends who try to make you stay, telling jokes and the news, singing songs to while the time away. Watch the Galway salmon run like silver, dancing, darting in the sun. Living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more. I stood by your Atlantic sea, and I sang a song for Ireland. Dreaming in the night, I saw a land where no one terrified. Waking in your dawn, I saw you crying in the morning light. Sleeping where the falcons fly, they twist and turn all in your air blue sky. Living on your western shore, saw summer sunsets, asked for more. I stood by your Atlantic sea, and I sang a song for Ireland.